This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. We're here every week to talk about subjects we think are interesting and important and topical for all of us who live here in the Western New York community. And one of the subjects that we're not only obsessed and engrossed with here in Western New York, but I guess in the whole country, is the issue of immigration and welcoming and our foreign-born people to this area and helping them to support them, all the different cultures that we have here in Western New York, and incorporating them into our society and making them useful citizens, helping them to become useful, productive citizens. And the reason I'm explaining all this is because I'm going to be talking to the group that I think has the primary responsibility for carrying out this mission, and it is the International Institute of Buffalo. And today in the studio with us is Jennifer Rizzo Choi, who is the executive director of the International Institute. And you know what? When Kevin comes back, I'm going to turn your mic on so you can say something too, Gabe, okay? Also in the studio with us is a well-known personality to us here at Odyssey, so we'll keep it a surprise visit for the moment. But anyway, I want Jennifer to tell us what I think is so important about the mission of the International Institute and what I said, the relationship between how they are helping refugees and immigrants here in New York. Let's start in Western New York. Let's just start with a little bit of the history, if you don't mind, of the International Institute. I mean, I'm very familiar with it over the years, and it's been, you know, so as I said, instrumental in helping people in Western New York. But maybe our listeners don't know, so we want to give them a little background about the International Institute, if you don't mind.
Of course, and thank you for having us as a guest today and the chance to talk about refugees and immigrants, because it's so important to have that be a mainstream topic that's discussed and embraced. The International Institute has been around for over 100 years. A lot of people don't realize all the things that we do. We were founded in 1918 as an organization that was welcoming the war brides of World War I soldiers who were returning home. You know, a lot of them went overseas and met a woman and got married and brought her back here, and she didn't necessarily speak English and didn't have community here. And so we started as a place to build community to help people transition from their prior life to their new life here, and that integration part includes learning English, getting documents translated, you know, convening together with people from your own culture to have celebrations and shared food and interests. And so we've always been a gathering place. If you visit our building, we're in one of the old mansions on Delaware Avenue, and it's been the site for decades of community celebrations and weddings and baptisms and ethnic folk dances and all those kinds of things. So we've always been a welcoming group. That's been our focus. We've welcomed all the immigrant waves over the years, the Polish, the Italians, the Lithuanians, all of those groups. And starting in 1980, in the 80s, when the passage of the Refugee Act happened within the Immigration and Nationality Act, that's when we got into doing refugee resettlement, which is the resettlement industry, if you will, is a formal industry that's supported and funded by State Department dollars. So we professionalized in a way that we started providing human services through a spectrum of different programming to support people.
So when you mentioned, you know, working with Washington, actually, is that, you know, internationally getting people to come who come over to get the proper credentials and help them come over, or are they already here when they contact you?
So we actually are handed our clients by the government. There's a pipeline that's set up and a process where when they come to us, they're ready to be integrated into their life. We literally pick them up at the airport. The way that our refugee resettlement system works, yeah, we go to the airport. I'll talk about that in a minute.
I love it.
refugee resettlement is a process that starts with somebody who has to leave their home country. They're fleeing because they're trying to escape persecution. They may be fleeing because it's something that is hunting them down for something they cannot change about themselves, their race, their tribe, their religion, whatever, something that they cannot escape from, and they're being persecuted by their own government. They would be leaving their home country and arriving in a country nearby where they then go sign up in a refugee camp with the United Nations and identify themselves as a refugee and go through a screening process. There are today more than 26 million refugees that are registered with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. That's a ton of people. There are more than 100 million displaced people identified by the UN around the world. So of that, 26 million of them are actually registered as a refugee with the UN and might end up through a resettlement process in a country like the US, in a place like Buffalo. But the truth is that there's a lot of people outside of their homeland. 100 million people, to give you a scope of that, that's more than the population of Germany, of people who cannot go home. So if you end up in a UN camp and you sign up, you go through a lot of screenings, questions, security stuff, medical screenings, and you will get tagged for resettlement in a country that is not of your choosing. The UN decides that. You can't say, I want to go to the US. You could be tagged to go to Germany or Australia or Canada. There's not anything that's in your control at that point. If you are lucky and you get tagged to go to one of those countries and it's the US, then at some point the State Department steps in and you get put into their set of screenings and procedures. Refugees are the most vetted population on the planet, contrary to popular opinion. They go through a ton of screening. And then you would then, through the State Department, get assigned to a national agency that has a local affiliate on the ground, like the International Institute. And so we know you're coming, usually about 2 weeks ahead of time. We get an email, and it's going to tell us family of six from Iraq that's coming with kids, and these are the ages, and they speak this language, and they're going to arrive at this date at the Buffalo International Airport, and that's where our work begins.
I love the idea. I smiled and you said, I'm going to tell you about that, because imagine having somebody meet you. You're coming from a strange land, maybe not even speaking the language. You might be alone or, you know, with a family. I don't, either way. And you get off the plane and there's somebody to meet you. There's something about that, or to greet you, that is so heartwarming and so important and welcoming that it makes it, I'm sure it makes quite a difference. You mentioned something before, so I'm going to go back to. Yes, what is the misconception? You just said how the most vetted population, refugees are the most vetted population. What are we confusing when people are upset about the possibility that somebody is coming here that's a terrorist or that means ill for our country? What are we confusing? Illegal immigrants, not refugees, something like that, with vetted people you are describing, refugees?
Right. I think that's where some of the confusion comes in. And I'm happy to explain that further. You know, there's no wrong way to show up and ask for help. I mean, I want to just put that out there. I mean, if someone was persecuting you today because of who you are and what religion you practice, you're not going to sit there and ask questions and wait around. You're going to go seek safety. Everyone ends up seeking safety in a different way. Refugees that come here for resettlement through that process are actually already screened and vetted because they waited in line. They left their home country, went to the UN, sat in a camp for years, potentially, before they got here. But in many ways, they're similar to other people who showed up here who didn't have that process or couldn't follow that process. There aren't refugee camps everywhere. They're only in certain parts of the world. If you're in Central America and you're fleeing violence in your hometown, you may not have a camp that you can get to that's, you know, within hours walking distance or several days driving. And so those people who show up at the border are referred to as refugees, but that's a term that I think is just used generally for someone who is outside their country seeking safety. They're, in fact, by legal definition, an asylum seeker, or other words that you use sometimes in the media that people often say are an undocumented immigrant or an illegal entrant. They're someone who didn't wait in line, maybe because they couldn't wait in line, right? And so they're showing up at the border and seeking safety and asking for asylum. So that's an asylum seeker. And they would have to go through a process on our soil that's a legal process to determine if they meet the definition, the legal definition of being a refugee under our laws. And that definition is someone who is outside their country of origin, who has been persecuted or fears future persecution on account of something they cannot control about themselves or change, which would be their race, their religion, their nationality, their political opinion, or the particular social group that they belong to, which is somewhat of a catch-all group that's not defined by those other four categories.
So it's very subjective. It's very subjective. I mean, also for the authorities to determine whether people are legitimately trying to escape because of the reasons of, you know, the danger or the reasons you gave, or just, I guess, wanting a better life and wanting to come to our country.
Right. And that's often a confusion that some people make. People assume that people are seeking and getting status in our country because they're an economic refugee, that they left their homeland because they couldn't make money there, and so they came here. And that's actually not one of those grounds I just described to you. The way I always describe it when I'm talking to people who are non-lawyers or law students is it's something about yourself that you cannot change. You can't change your religion and what you look like. You were born that way. You're part of that community and culture. You can change your economic conditions potentially by, you know, maybe working or changing jobs or whatever, but that's the way the law defines it is as an immutable characteristic. And that's how it's been recognized for years in international human rights law and was, you know, watered down and filtered into our law. And so when people make a claim for refugee status, whether they do it abroad to do the resettlement process or they do it at the border asking for asylum, either way, they have to explain their story, what happened to them, what group they belong to, and why they feel they're being persecuted, and why they can't go back home. And why they can't go back home is connected to their government. Their government has to be shown to be the oppressor or unable to stop the oppression of that particular group.
This is all very specific and legalistic, and I wish people – I'm glad that you're here to explain this, Jennifer, because I think there's a lot, as you said, of misconceptions and all of the controversy, political controversy, about, you know, immigration, illegal immigration, resettlement, all of this would be if Amal Clooney was here now, she probably could not do as good a job as you are. So explaining
this. Thank you for that, yeah. But I appreciate it. I would love to have access to her donors.
Yeah, I know. So now let's just talk a little bit about Western New York, about what happens. First of all, you mentioned there are millions and millions of refugees. How would legal immigrants that we're talking about, refugees, legitimate refugees, how would they end up, what would determine whether they end up in Buffalo? Do they have to have family here or a job here? You know, you always hear you can't come here unless you had like a connection to West New York, or you have it maybe in the old days when they would not let people come unless they had a job. You know that?
Yeah, I remember that, yes. My family is Italian, so like those stories
right.
have been told.
I was just thinking about it. We're all immigrants and we have stories like that where you had to have family to come from Italy or Ireland, or and then one person would come and then the rest would follow, that kind of thing. I don't know if it's like that anymore.
So it really, I always go back to, it depends on your point of entry and the legal status that you're given by the government. So immigrants seeking to come here do have an expectation that they not become a public charge, that they not end up on welfare or receive public aid, right? Immigrants coming here have to show that they're going to be financially stable. So if you're a U.S. citizen and you married a foreign-born person, if you're sponsoring them, then you would sign on the dotted line and say, I am financially responsible for this person and I'm going to pay for them because they're not going to go on public assistance. If you're coming here on a various visa mechanism, whether it's a student visa or a work visa, someone signing up and saying, I'm responsible for this person. If you're coming on a conference visa, et cetera, the U.S. government looks at you in advance and screens you. And a visa is essentially permission to enter. We've investigated you and we know you have sufficient resources to come to our country and afford to be here. So those are immigrants. That's different than refugees who have that obligation waived because of the humanitarian issue. See. We don't expect that they're going to be able to come here and come here with money because these are folks who had to leave everything behind, including sometimes businesses, homes, family members. So we understand that they're behind, and we need to help them get a leg up upon coming here. And so there is a process, and that involves institutions like the Institute, where we're given some money, starter money, if you will, to provide them with a caseworker and to help them start their new chapter of their lives here.
So, I mean, I was kind of right and kind of wrong. I mean, in a sense of what people's expectations are or what their knowledge is. So Kevin is going to turn on Gabe's mic, and I'm going to identify us that we are on Target, and I'm your host, Penny Wolfgang, and our guest today that you've been listening to is Jennifer Rizzo-Choi, who's the Executive Director of the International Institute of Buffalo, and we are discussing this really, really important topical subject of immigration and refugees and the work of the International Institute. And a good friend of the radio turned up with Jennifer, a good friend of many listeners, Gabe, who's going to say hello, introduce himself, and tell us what you're having to do, what you are doing now for the institution, the International Institute of Buffalo, Gabe.
So, hi. Thanks, Judge. I'm Gabe DeMayo, and I've been around Buffalo radio forever and ever, and, you know, in public radio at WBFO and WNED. And I also worked here in these studios, not these studios. We used to work over on across from the Home Depot back in the old days when WBEN was over by Channel 4, and they lived in that building there on Elmwood Avenue.
Yeah, so that's, forgot about that.
I worked for Star 102 back in the day, and I've been at WGR when WGR played music. And I started off as an intern at KB Radio back in the olden days.
And they're going to be hearing you now, today.
Say so.
All
it's
the
like
stations you just mentioned.
So there you go. So,
but
now my work is as the communications director for the International Institute. And it's about 6 weeks now, and I'm just not getting lost in the building anymore. And that's great. But, you know, my job is to be the liaison for the organization vis-a-vis these types of interviews and telling the story of this great 100-plus-year-old institution. We have been doing the good work for so long, and my job is to make sure that everybody in Western New York knows about it, not only about the institution of itself, but the work that we do in helping immigrants, refugees, and asylees, people who want to come here or are coming here by, you know, life's circumstances. And it's a great opportunity to tell those stories as a, you know, as a communicator, you know, and Jenny knows from her job as a reporter, there are 100 stories that there are to tell every single day. You know, we had an event yesterday, part of Welcoming Week. We did Welcoming Day yesterday where at City Hall, and we raised the refugee flag to sort of acknowledge the importance of welcoming. And Buffalo in Western New York is the best, most welcoming place for immigrants and refugees, not only because, well, we, you know, have an economy that's being helped by refugees, but also the people here, right? We have a history of immigration in Western New York and Buffalo, and that generation of, as Jenny mentioned before, the Italians, the Poles, and those old guard, you know, immigrants are the type of people who would welcome the new refugees, those who are coming from Ukraine, those who are coming from Afghanistan, from Iraq, and those countries. And they're great stories to tell because they are American stories. You know, they're the quintessential nation of immigrants. They are American stories. And it's just, you know, a universal struggle to find a better life, right? And I'm just very excited to tell that story.
And Jenny's doing a great job explaining it to us as well, and, you know, and explaining that instead of being concerned about a threat, if we understand the background and the history, and also, as you said, remember that we all were immigrants here sometime or other. And I want to talk a little bit about the benefit that immigrants, and Gabe mentioned this in a minute, what they do, it's like lately, years ago when they first came, but I'm talking about now, employment and different help that generations are giving here, making a difference here in Western New York right now.
Absolutely. I mean, Buffalo has really benefited from refugees and immigrants coming here. I mean, we've got this whole history of it, right, with all the different waves. But, you know, this is a place that had manufacturing and industrial decline. We've had population loss for something like 70 years. And in the last census, finally, our population reversal happened, where we started to have growth rates. And it's because of the foreign born. That's because there's refugees here, there's immigrants here. They're coming into our community, making it their own, they're improving neighborhoods, and they're taking jobs. Employers in this town have struggled to be able to fill positions. We get calls all the time. The Institute does a lot of services to help support people start their new lives here. One of those is we have an entirely robust employment team where we screen our clients that have come in. We identify what skill sets they have. We put them into a class that we call Job Club, where we work with them on soft skills, like what it'll be like to work in a U.S. workplace, business cards, preparing your resume, practicing interviews. I mean, it's our culture is different than what they might be used to. And so we prepare them for their life working here. We then have at least 30 employers that we have very solid relationships with in this community that are willing to hire our clients. And so we set up, we screen them for their ability, and we place them in jobs. We go and we act as sort of a mini human resources to get that relationship going. And you see our clients being hired in light manufacturing, in landscaping, in housekeeping, and then also in more professionalized industries as well. So there's refugees working at Niagara Chocolates, at Harmac Medical. I can give you an example of one of the most recent populations we resettled is Afghans. The Institute took in 131 Afghans plus three newborn babies that were born here. In the span of 4 months, and in that group of individuals, which were moms and dads and kids, we had three airplane mechanics, two accountants, one surgeon, one barber, and several business owners. And so those are people whose lives were interrupted where they were, right? And we want to make sure that they can get back and be as close to what they're doing here now, because they had all that education and training. And the truth is, it's hard to find mechanics, right? Those jobs are unfilled.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's filling a need. And as this is such a perfect time, I know it's been going on for a long time, period of time, but everybody needs workers. I mean, you know, as we know, help wanted signs are just ubiquitous. You can't go anywhere of any kind of job. So this is really filling a need. Instead of being a drain on the community, it's actually filling a need for the community.
It absolutely is. We constantly get calls from employers that want to work with us and find a way to onboard new workers. A big part of it, though, is cultural understanding, because, you know, as people settle into their American life, you know, for them, it's an adjustment too, as it is for the employees at that organization, to learn how to work with a new group of people as they learn the language. And even if they know the trade and the skill, they still are working on English and settling into their home.
What did I pick up, which made me Buffalo Spree, I think, where there was a cultural competency training from the International Institute, and this was this brochure, and it got my attention, and I thought, we really need that, and it said, we welcome, connect, and empower the foreign-born and encourage the region's support of different cultures. So this got my attention because it's kind of what you're talking about, that there's global education, there's, you know, cultural competency, all of that is taking place right at the Institute.
Absolutely. And we have a department focused on that. It's our International Education Department. So you can hire us to come in and do a cultural competency training for your staff to learn about what it's like to work with different cultures. If you're an employer in particular and you want to hire refugees, we do provide a list of services, and we will come in and meet with your staff and talk to you about so you can understand where your new colleagues, what they came from. And have an understanding of what, you know, some of their practices and customs and cultures will be like. I can give an example. We had an employer that hired about, I think it was 10 Iraqis to do light industrial work. And they were hard workers, but some of the coworkers had noticed that they were disappearing for 15, 20 minutes, and it wasn't like the scheduled break time. And so there was complaints being made. And after, you know, someone called us and we connected, it was, they were actually disappearing to go pray, because it was, you know, the appointed hour of the day. They needed to do that, you know, facing the sun. You know, they needed to have the space that's appropriate to do that. And as you're, I'm sure, well aware, New York State law does provide and support for that. And so that was really just a conversation that needed to happen with the employer. And once that person was informed, they were super accommodating about making sure that there was an appropriate room and an ability to do that. And then also communicating to the staff that, you know, this doesn't mean that individuals aren't going to be working as hard. You know, maybe we can make accommodations another way, but this is important to them and it's part of their ethos that they do, just like you and I have our own rituals, you know, that we may do in the course of our day.
And as far as the language goes, I know that that's always been one of the strong points of the International Institute, that they have classes and interpreters and people available. Because like in court, we always would call the International Institute for an interpreter when a defendant or a witness spoke a language that, you know, we needed help with. And they always were so available, which is amazing to me.
Well, thank you for that business. I really appreciate it. You know, certainly we want to provide language access. That's super important that people are understood in their own language. But beyond that, it's a great thing that we run because we're able to employ former clients to be contractors and make money, right? I mean, a lot of our interpreters are former refugees who've come here who might be in school or stay-at-home moms, but they can interpret it like, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon at a court appointment, right, at a court hearing. But we have, I think this one's a throwback to our 100-year history where I talked about the fact that when people came here who weren't from here and they didn't speak English, they needed someone to translate for them. And so we've always had this business, and I think we are the gold standard in town for that business. We have over 200 contract interpreters that work for us. We can provide translation and interpretation both in person and on video and through phone in over 100 different languages. We can be there within 24 hours. We can also do it on demand immediately if you call us impromptu. So I've run a lot of nonprofits. I do think it's pretty awesome to have a small business housed within a nonprofit because that's a cool function. But it's providing such a needed community service.
Absolutely.
We're serving the courts and all these other places.
I can attest to that. I can't thank you enough for sharing all this information. And it was great talking to you and Gabe. Let us tell our listeners where they can contact you for more information or for help or if they want, you know, to refer someone to you, what would they do?
Sure. They can for sure call our phone number. Our main line is 716-883-1900, or they can visit our website, which is www.iibuff.org. So that's an easy way to find us. We also have a presence on social media, so you can easily find us. And, you know, once you call, we can get you connected to whatever service you're looking for.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you. And thanks for listening, everybody. We really appreciate you being with us every week. Please join us again next week, same time, same station. Have a good week. Talk to you soon. Bye now.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.